Welcome to Cisflix, the podcast where we won't judge you for talking through the movie. Cisflix are the movies you laugh at, yearn for, and overanalyze with your girls, significant others, and now us.
We are your hosts,
Paola
and Nadja, two sisters and designers who discuss chick flicks we hate to love,
tropes we love to hate,
and all of the aesthetic choices in between. Join us as we break down our favorite movies together. Hey, sister.
Hey, sister.
I don't like that. That sounded aggressive. Hey, sister.
Hey, sister.
Hey, sister.
It's about to be May. The Idea of You comes out.
Oh, my God. Shit, you're totally right. Wait, have you read the book?
No, I have not. I'm so sorry.
Why are you apologizing? I'm not the author. So I've been reading this book and I am generally like a pretty fast reader, but I'm sorry, y'all. Getting through it has been such a slog. There came a part where my consciousness boycotted this book because I think like I knew what was going to happen and I was like, no, I reject this. And I stopped reading it for like a month.
The story? Right, because it gets a little like...
Shit just gets weird. Shit gets weird. Also, like, it's not well written. But, like, I don't think it has to be. You know, whatever.
Yeah, we've talked about this.
We have.
We don't read it for the writing.
No! We don't read it for the writing. We read it for the movie that plays right behind your eyelids.
Hello.
Come on now.
When you watch Hayes.
Hayes Campbell. The fucking names in these books, my dude. But yes, I've been reading this book. I'm, like, three quarters of the way. And I, like... I've read a few reviews.
Yeah, say what you feel.
It's like I'm processing. I'm buffering. I read a couple of reviews of the movie when it showed at, I think it was like South By. And the reviews are literally like, the main characters are endearing. The writing isn't that good. Like that. For like the movie. And I'm like, okay, slay. We love just a rom-com.
Okay. But the trailer?
The trailer is very good. Yes.
The chemistry between Nicholas Galitzine and Anne Hathaway. The one part where he's at the piano and then he like grabs the back of her leg and pulls her. I'm like, ooh.
Mess.
I'm too old for you. No, you're not.
Oh, shit. Yeah, they do seem to have really, really great chemistry.
Amazing.
Even though I'm not done with the book, I already know what happens. Like, I kind of spoiled it for myself, so.
What, did you do a Harry and then go to the end?
No, I asked one of my friends to tell me the ending.
Okay.
I guess we haven't talked about The Idea of You too much before, like on the previous Eclipse or anything, but it's pretty obvious that the storyline for the movie was changed significantly to align more with the storyline of Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde's relationship.
Oh, shit.
Did you not know this?
No.
Yes. Even the way that they style Nicholas Galitzine is exactly like Harry Styles. People have put up on Instagram side-by-sides of promo pictures of One Direction from like 15 years ago.
Oh, that I've seen.
And promo pictures of like Nicholas Galitzine and August Moon. And it's like bing, boom. Like they didn't even try to hide it. It's one for one. They put little dumb tattoos on him. Like Harry Styles has all these little dumb tattoos. They're not even fucking trying. I love that.
Can I just say his tattoos are actually really dumb?
No shit, Paola.
Like, so far, what I've seen in trailers, they're actually pretty dumb.
What did you think they were going to be? Intellectual?
I mean, cool. Maybe follow some type of flow, vibe.
The sticker tattoos, people are loving that shit.
It just...
Getting little random unrelated shit drives me nuts. I mean, whatever. Their body, their choice. Anyway. So he's like, it's not even hidden, right? Like, they've literally taken elements of like... Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde's like real life relationship because they met at Coachella. People like know this. So the fact that they changed how they meet in the movie.
Robin Lee was really like, let me just write these bitches' story.
No, because that's not like that in the book.
Oh.
That's what I'm saying. So they've diverted the storyline of the movie to be very Harry Styles forward.
Can we talk about how mad Robin Lee is, though?
Oh,
why?
She's pissed. Can what? I just... She's like, Hayes doesn't have any tattoos.
Is this making you money? Okay, relax. Like,
Paola, If somebody did an adaptation of a book I fucking wrote, and first of all, the book read like that, and they still made an adaptation of it, I would take my Amazon Jeff Bezos branded money, I would take it to my eyes, I would dab the little tears off my face.
Exactly.
Because, girl.
But again, I mean, there's ownership of your writing, and she's for sure that they're taking liberties with it.
I took liberties. Yeah, for sure. I could see that being frustrating and upsetting, definitely.
Yeah. But it's going to be better. So.
I genuinely think it is. And the irony is that if you took the book so far, again, because I don't know the details about the ending. If you took the book and like storyboarded it for me and just gave me an outline, bullet points of this book, I would be like, oh, hell yeah. I definitely want to read that. And somehow the reading of it, I'm like, okay, like, great.
Like, you can, she can Julia Quinn it, where you're just like, all right, thank you. This is amazing.
Put on your fancy hats. Go hang out with the cast.
Go for the fucking ride. Yeah. Just hop on the bandwagon.
Julia Quinn's having the time of her fucking life.
And just let another artist take this and take it and make you some cash.
Right. Oh, my God. I was just looking at like content from the movie Bottoms, a movie that I will convince you to cover.
You've been wanting to do like a nice silly movie.
It's so fucking funny. It is a crime that Nicholas Galitzine does not do more just straight up comedy. Just dumb, stupid comedy. Because it's upsetting. Because it's like, all right, okay, you look like that. Okay, fine. Oh, you're like a pretty good actor. That's annoying. Fine. Oh, you're a musician and you can like play multiple instruments and you sing well. Now I'm getting annoyed. And then it's like, oh, and you're like funny? No, I'm pissed. Get like, out of my face.
What can you not do?
Yeah. Sleep, apparently, go as I've already sleep. Said.
That's exactly. What can you not do? Sleep.
Take a goddamn break. And it's probably because he doesn't have any money. But I'm like, you are working.
Gotta work. He's got to take advantage of his youth.
Of his youth? He's my age. Oh, just kidding. He's not 30 yeah, yet.
But like, I feel like Mary and George, you definitely see a lot more of that range.
Oh, good segue.
Hey.
Guys, let's applaud that segue from Paola. That was elite.
Because it's like dark, but like comical in some points. Like watching it off the bat, first episode, I was like, oh, this is not, I kind of wasn't expecting that.
Yo, so we actually have not talked about this almost at all because we've been reserving our energy to do it on mic. So tell me, because I watched this a few weeks before you were able to, just because I don't have children, and I binged it in one day because I'm insane, and I found it so funny.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's comical in a way, and I'm like, okay, that's not what I was expecting.
Rarely do I ever cackle during a period piece, you know what I mean? Like, there were a few moments where I was like, oh shit, like okay, so just to give a brief, this is just gonna be vibes overview of Mary and George. So Mary and George as a series, it's a mini series that premiered on Sky TV in the UK at the beginning of March. In the US, it was released on Stars on April 4th. So Stars is both like a television channel and a streaming service. On the streaming service, you can stream all of the episodes. You can binge it. On the channel? Wait, no, you can't.
It's releasing. Yo.
Get the fuck out.
So they did us dirty with the release of Mary and George in the US, because we know from friends and people who provided information.
Totally, sure.
In the UK, the whole season was released, right? It was all dropped at once. They are doing a weekly release here in the US. They started on April 4th, they're going to do it every Friday at 9 p.m. on Stars. You're not going to be able to stream this all together. When I realized that,
the disrespect.
I was so pissed. I was very upset.
My attitude when I can't binge a TV show, it's like an iPad baby behavior. Like, I'm like, why aren't there more episodes? What are you doing to me? Do you think I will wait? I refuse.
So I was extremely frustrated when I realized that.
So this series was created by DC Moore. It was directed by Oliver Hermanus.
Hermana?
Hermanus, Florian Kassen, and Alex Winkler. It was adapted from the nonfiction novel The King's Assassin, The Fatal Affair of George Villiers and King James I by Benjamin Woolley. The series is starring Julianne Moore as Mary Villiers, Nicholas Galitzine as her son, her second son, George Villiers, Tony Curran as King James I.
King James I of England.
Correct.
The fifth of Scotland. Or is it fourth of Scotland?
Sixth.
The sixth. There you go. It's, I got my eyes
He's
crossed.
Literally King James the sixth and first.
Right.
Which is so goofy.
King James the sixth and first of Scotland and England, respectively.
That's so fucking goofy. All of the supporting cast are fantastic, but those three are really your biggest players. Like, they're the show. And something really fun about a lot of media that comes out of England or comes out of like Great Britain is that a lot of those actors, whether they be English, Scottish, Irish, whatever, a lot of them have like a really deep history in theater, and they view theater as like the acting, you know, like movies and TV are fine, but theater is like what they do. And Tony Curran is a theater actor, and he's fucking great.
He's so good.
He's so good. Like, I was reading a couple of reviews to kind of like get a couple more like little facts, background information. And one of the words that I saw a reviewer use to describe King James, like his portrayal of King James, was mercurial. And I was like, that's perfect. Mercurial. Because this guy goes from like lusty orgies, I want to fuck, to like biting George so hard on the arm that he leaves teeth marks and cuts the skin, then like fighting people in like the outdoors outside of the palace, getting restrained, locking himself in his bedroom, refusing to go to Scotland, and then going to Scotland, and then having a big emotional, it's like he's having every spectrum of
There's
emotions.
So many emotions. First of all, he plays cockstruck really well.
I'm okay. Deceased.
The way this man portrays everything you just said, you know, including lust, love, anger, power, like within the same vicinity, like all within seconds of each other. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Oh, I mean, honestly, this was probably my favorite line that King James delivers in the entire series. Take me, bury me.
Ooh!
Make me forget who I am. So good.
Bury me.
So good. So good.
By episode 2.
Yeah, damn. Something that I really enjoy about this show, I think the pacing is done really well.
I feel that they rushed the ending. Yeah. The ending felt rushed to me.
Yeah.
This could have easily...
It could have been 10 episodes. It could have been 12.
This could have been an ongoing series.
Yeah.
Or it could have been longer episodes. Yeah, 10 episodes would have been great. Because the last two episodes almost felt like it was too much.
Yeah.
They were just kind of trying to pack in a lot of events and information up until the end. And it felt like a lot. I'm like, you could have stretched that out another two or three episodes, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's good, though. Like, you would have still... There is so much hot goss in this whole situation. Yes. Throughout these decades that George Villiers pretty much had power. Like... Through the king, through the trust
through
of everyone.
His dick.
Honestly.
Right. There's tons of hot goss because of shit that happened while George was pretty much puppeteering
so
the king.
So it's entertaining. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No lulls.
Yeah.
No lulls in this whole thing.
There definitely could have been, I think, more examination. So the series from episode to episode will cut from time period to time period. So they'll skip a few years. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I find that kind of interesting, but as Bala was saying, so much stuff happens in the interim. Like, they really could have mined all of those events and made it like extra juicy, built up like a longer, meatier miniseries. Like, 7 episodes, and they were great. Like, I'm not coming for the episodes, but it could have easily, to me, been 12. And like, you really dive in, like, and you don't do the time jumps or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Also, like, I just want to call out the music, the production design, and the costume design, because oh shit, it's so fucking good. So the music was done by Oliver Coates, who also did the score for After Sun, which is a movie that Bon and I watched together recently. The production design is done by Helen Scott. The reason I'm bringing up the production design and the music, something about the music of this show, it does a very good job of being sinister. It does a very good job of giving you this unease and this like foreboding mm-hmm. feeling. And there's a modernity to the music that I feel like keeps you engaged. Like, you're not just watching people in frou-frou fancy costumes. You're kind of feeling like, oh shit, this is real, because there's this grittiness almost to the show. And that's also why I'm calling out the production designer, Helen Scott, who is known for a couple of TV series, but I think she crushed it. Like, the production design. And it's so funny because you spend so much time throughout the series in palaces and they all feel dark and dingy and disgusting.
And I think they really made an effort in using the lighting as true to how it would have been at the time as possible, which makes it more
dark,
right? Like, dark, everything's candlelit. Mm-hmm. They use artificial lighting when it's extremely necessary.
Yeah.
Because it felt very authentic.
Yes.
Like, you're just in dark rooms a lot.
Carrying the little candle like you're fucking Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yo,
yeah.
Seriously. And so it adds to the moodiness of the show.
It adds to the moodiness of the show. And you could also take that to be very, like, symbolic, right? If you're like my sister and I. Like, there's only so much that is revealed to you by this, like, singular source of light. That's a candle. There's a lot more hidden in the darkness. And I think that's a great, like, metaphor for Mary and George and how they approach kind of like infiltrating the court of King James. The color palettes, everything is like kind of muted and sad and yucky. And I'm not saying yucky. I'm not even saying that like in a bad way. I'm just saying that it is in like, there's this like, I don't know, almost like a sense of a kind of decay and hopelessness for a lot of the show.
There is. And then they balance that out with power colors. You see a lot of red and
blue,
reds and like these deep tones. That's the balance. There's decay and power. Honestly, that's what it feels like.
Even like King James, right, played by Tony Curran, Mary Villiers, played by Julianne Moore, they both have like naturally red hair. And I feel like that will be the main color in so many scenes that they're in, like the color of their hair, or they'll put them in dark clothing to contrast their paleness and their hair color against the color of the clothing. Like, especially Tony Curran, because he's naturally like a soft, like light, bright redhead, but they have to put him in a wig because he has to have longer hair to be more contemporaneous with like the late 1500s. And there's something so blendy. There's something like he's a low contrast.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it feels like he almost looks like, I don't want to say filtered, because I think there's like a rawness to how they make them up, right, for the show. But I think it's easy to lose James's features because he's so low contrast. And I think that's successful, like metaphorically successful.
Ooh, I see where you're going with that. Yeah, for sure.
Paola, you're going to fucking love this. The costume designer for Mary and George, who did a fucking exquisite job, okay? Like, Julianne Moore's exquisite. The costumes are exquisite. It's all fucking great. The costumes are amazing. She did the costumes for Love Again, your favorite rom-com of 2023, with Priyanka Chopra and Sam Heughan.
Oh my God, no. Oh no. Why?
Range, baby. We call that range.
Wow, range. That is what we call range. Shit. Julianne Moore did this role.
Exquisite!
Maybe I just haven't seen enough media with Julianne Moore. But this is the first time that I see Julianne Moore like this dark.
Oh.
And cunning and conniving.
Cunty.
Cunty.
Cunning. Ooh. Cunty. It's dark. She's also so funny. And I know I've already said that. And I'm repeating myself. She's so funny in this. I think we regard British humor with like an expectation of like dry sarcasm, because that's really how a lot of their humor hits. And she delivers it so well, like just this perfect balance. The plot line of the miniseries kind of starts, I mean, literally with George's birth, and lingers on kind of like his formation, his coming of age, and how he's used as like a pawn by multiple people to get things that they want from like the king, whether that's like property, money, whatever, because he's hot. Literally, like, George gets things because he's hot.
He's quite literally pimped out by his mother.
Yes. The bitch does not hide it. She's straightforward. Like, you're stunning. Why don't we put you in front of the obviously gay king? Why don't we put you in front of this gay ass king who's gonna fall in love with you? I just know it. And she was fucking right.
One of my favorite lines. Bodies are just bodies.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I found the show to be so well written. It is quotable as fuck. Like, the lines are so good.
It is so good. The dialogue is great. they go, bodies are just bodies. I think George says that to his mom in French.
Yes.
And she answers with their currency. I was like, ooh.
It's such a good show. And it's such a great exploration of multiple themes. Like, I think a theme that Bon and I kind of like, I don't want to say harp on, but like constantly discuss from a lot of these movies that we have talked about so far and movies that we enjoy like in our personal lives is like feminism and ways in which feminism kind of has to be covert and women have to find these clandestine ways of controlling their lives because you have to let the men believe that they're in charge so that they'll leave you the fuck alone. And there's this energy to Mary where half of her is like, in your face, I'm going to try and control fucking everything. And then the other half is like slick and sly and just like, I'm going to let you believe you're killing it. And secretly, I'm pulling all the strings.
Oh, for sure.
I'm going to make sure that I win no matter what. Oh, I can use my children. Super. I'm going to win because you know what? My children are mine. He's my George. She says my about her George son
from the beginning, as soon as he's born.
He's not a person. He's my thing with which I can do what I please. I mean, her plotting, her fucking scheming, like she's so amoral. She only wants to advance.
It's about herself. She's advancing herself and her family. Everything she does is to that end. Like she quite literally sets all her kids up. They were all tools to get her where she wanted to be, to the point where she started to influence the king himself. And we're talking about, you know, actual, factual, real life. The way Julianne Moore portrayed that was stunning.
And if Kris Jenner did not read the Mary Villiers guidebook, okay?
That's exactly it.
Kris Jenner looked at her kids and she was like, damn, you're all pretty hot. I bet I could use this. Oh, you made some bad choices with your body? We can spin it. Bodies are just bodies.
Their currency.
God, even the part, and this is like in some clips that were released, this is like in the trailer, I think. There's this part where like George and Mary are walking and he's like, aren't you going to get me married off, mother? Like, have you found me a wife? And she's like, I think we aim higher. You know, there's this like duke or this count or whatever the fuck, nobility person who's looking for like a cup holder. He's like, you want me to hold some guy's cups?
The line is, you want me to hold a man's cups while he swallows.
What?
She goes,
the specifics are up to you.
It's not a man, it's a king. And she sends him to France to get him educated?
Yes, it's for his education.
To learn the ways of the court. So here's what I mean when I talk about the way it opens, like episode one. And what you come to expect from Nicolas Galitzine playing George Villiers from the trailers and the snippets that we've gotten to see before it comes out. Right, like you see like this powerful, dominating character. And when this show opens, this man is a wimp.
Aww.
He's just like a fucking little twat. Like,
yeah. He's a little brat.
He's bratty. He's a little bitch.
Yeah.
Mary has her George.
Yes. Briefly, trigger warning for suicide attempt, suicidal ideation, which is in canon with this show.
And the next scene, it's literally her cutting him down from a tree because he attempted.
He is basically super bent out of shape that he's in love with this little servant girl in their house and he's not allowed to like marry her because she's a servant. And he does a terrible job of trying to hang himself and just kind of bruises and fucks up his neck. Mary finds him out in the woods in the process of trying to hang himself, but not doing it well. And this bitch cuts him down and just lets him fall on the ground. And it is savage.
Savage.
She's just looking down at him like, really? That little fucking stunt? Are you kidding? You better hope your neck doesn't scar. Like, she like, it's so funny.
And literally, he's just like,
I love Jenny. I want to be with Jenny.
I'm not going to go to France. Like, I'll kill myself. You want to punch him in the face? Tu quieres dar una pela.
Yeah. Like this. A dumb little baby.
So this is how you're introduced to him. That's what I mean by I wasn't expecting that off the bat. You see him come into this power, quote, pun intended, sorry. And
dead. I'm dead.
Quite literally just coerced by his mom, just pushed by his mom the whole time. If his mom was not there, this man would be nothing.
Can I just tell you, yo, the twist of twists, I was not expecting Julianne Moore to be queer within this, the first two episodes.
No, no, no. know. I expected it. I feel like you get a glimpse of that in the trailers. I just didn't expect that shit to be like right away. Mm-hmm.
I thought they would build up to it more.
She was like, okay, yeah, I'm here. Here's some money.
Anyway, we should fall in love.
Listen, she paid her extra because she's like, I'm gonna need extra. And she must have done a lot because she had never let her go for the rest of her time. I feel like Mary is, like, visually, she's almost placed opposite King James. Mm-hmm. You know what you were saying about King James, like how his moods are, like one minute he's passionate, one minute he's angry. Like, you don't really know what to expect from him. Mm-hmm. I get that so much from Mary as well. And also their colorings. Like, their colorings mirror each other. Mm-hmm. And I feel like their attitudes also mirror each other, where they have this passion to their character. They have this anger to their character. Just like what you said, there's this part where King James quite literally bites George and leaves teeth marks.
Yeah.
Mary does the same to one of her husbands. They make a point to show this scene where she's biting his lip and, like, it hurts him. Mm-hmm. But then they're also very, like, calm and calculated when they have to be. He's the king. You expect a maturity and kind of an anticipation of what the other person's doing or is going to do. You get that from King James. That's exactly what you get from Mary the whole series. They're the two smartest people the whole time.
I agree. And it's funny because I think there are times when James, you're supposed to view him almost as, like, infantile. He has these big blow-ups and it's like he's just mm-hmm. acting out like he's being a brat, or he's ignoring duties,
yes.
Or he's having a fucking orgy instead of seeing his dying wife, or, you know, whatever. Like, lots of things like that where you're kind of supposed to doubt James's maturity. And then you have these blips throughout the series where it's like, yes, he's the smartest person in the room. Or like, yes, he's fully aware of what's going on. He just chooses to fucking ignore it. It really does make you wonder, like, how much is he actually getting played? He gets played a bit. He gets played a fair bit.
He gets played quite a bit.
Yeah.
So maybe he's not the smartest person.
Damn, no, maybe you're right. Maybe I perjured myself and the court reporter should strike my comments from the record.
No,
but
me too. Me too. No, but he definitely has, like, these moments of wisdom.
Oh, when he did, like, the buried heart.
Yeah. He's, like, a very
sentimental,
deep romantic,
like, or yes. rather portrayed, right? Like, who the fuck knows what King James the First was like. But he's portrayed as being super sentimental, super, like, romantic love oriented, but at the same time fickle, right? Like, his attentions will change and his desires will change. And, like, even with all of that, the fact that he, like, held on to this love that he experienced as a young man for his entire life, again, it's portrayed through the show. We don't know if that's true.
No, it is.
Are you fucking serious?
Yes. He had a relationship with, like, an older cousin, and that was, like, his great love. And he learned a lot from him. And we see him bury his heart in one scene. So these portrayals of him, of his relationships, are pulled from letters that are documented.
And history will call them friends. It's like, I kept his heart, I buried it, I loved him. And it's like, and they were very best friends.
And they were the bestest friends ever. When you're looking up the real events that took place and where they're pulling this from in history, like, they will be like, oh, this hasn't been proven. Like, oh, these are
allegedly.
This is speculation. It's just heavily implied and blah, blah, blah. Like, bitch, if you don't. No, it was not heavily implied. It is actually, hold on, there's something he says, and I think, like, he has, like, this big speech that's documented. And they did not include in the series. And I'm not sure why. Mm. I was waiting to kind of hear this because it's mentioned. So the first place I heard it mentioned was in Red, White, and Royal Blue, where Prince Henry is talking to his bisexual boyfriend about this historical love story. And he's talking to him about King James and George Villiers.
His hunky, hot boyfriend.
Hold on. I have a clip here. Just indulge me, please.
Absolutely.
I'm going to dream about him at night, okay? He's so hot. He's so hot. He's not a human person that exists on Earth. He's so...
That's how we feel about Nicholas Galitzine.
First of all, I just want to clarify. I want to clarify for everyone. I was saying that about Taylor Tekar Perez. I was that exultant about his physical beauty. And I would be again. Nothing about me has changed. So
when Prince Henry was talking to his very hot boyfriends.
I'm dead. You fucker.
He was telling them the story about King James and George Villiers. When he's telling him about it, he tells them a quote. And this is also pointed out in the book, The King's Assassin. This is how he would speak of him in public. The line is, "I wish to speak in my own behalf and not to have it thought to be a defect. For Jesus Christ did the same, and therefore I cannot be blamed. Christ had John and I have George." So this is where the flowery dialogue comes from. These are documented. These are written in letters that have been documented that they write to each other. And the love between him and his older, I forget what it's like, the Earl something, and his older cousin, that's also documented in letters as well.
It's so emo.
It is a little emo.
They would have loved emo music.
He called them his wife.
God damn.
In a letter that King James wrote to George, he tells him, "God bless you, my sweet child and wife."
Ew.
"I naturally so love your person and adore all your other parts, which are more than ever one man had. I desire only to live in the world for your sake, and I will live and die a lover of you."
That's like romantic. The simpery.
"I will live and die the a simpiness. Lover of you." Simpy. He was a simp. There you go. Simp. He was smart, a king, but he was just a fucking simp.
He was just a
That's
simp.
What it was. Love blinded this man. He let himself be blinded by love. He was quite literally cockstruck.
Goddamn. Also, plug for a fantastic song by Jack White that was written for the Great Gatsby soundtrack. Love is Blindness. Fantastic song.
Ooh,
listen to that one with King James in your mind.
There you go. "Whether you loved me now better than at the time which I shall never forget at Farnham, where the bed's head could not be found between the master and his dog."
What the fuck does that even mean?
It means that these boys be fucking.
Yo, stop taking my catchphrases. Stop taking my catchphrases. Because these boys do be fucking. Also, can I just say, just based on portraiture, Tony Curran, who plays King James I, is such a striking likeness to this man. It's like frightening.
I would generalize it and say the casting overall is spectacular. If you go back and look at the portraits of these real life figures that they're portraying, the casting is amazing. They really resemble the real life figures. You know what? And this is why the Oscars are adding a category for casting. Because let me tell you, to be able to find the resemblance of these people and also the talent... It's amazing. Like, think about the people you have to sift through.
Yeah. Oh, my
Incredible.
God. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's really, really good. And again, the costumes are fantastic. The use of color is great. We have an awesome listener, a friend of the pod, who has been sending us, like, a lot of awesome content that relates to Mary and George.
A sister of the pod.
A sister of the pod. Yeah, that has been sending us really awesome, like, art references and, like, paintings that resemble things that happened in Mary and George. Like, they are clearly very intelligent and knowledgeable about fine art and art history and, like, they have such an awesome point of view because I took a few art history classes only because they were related to my degree, but I don't have any expertise in that at all. And they were sending us like paintings and being like, oh, this is kind of like that one scene in Mary and George. And it's like, oh shit, dude. Like, yes. You're so fucking right.
So cool.
I was going to say it's kind of how we discussed in Pride and Prejudice, right? Like Joe Wright has this tendency of viewing scenes like tableaus. Whether that's like a scenery landscape painting, whether that is like a Rococo era painting, whether that is like a Renaissance era, like portrait of a family kind of standing around. all of it looks so intentional, and the same, I think, sensibility is in Mary and George throughout, where you have these incredibly framed shots that just end up looking like this is a gorgeous painting from the fucking like Renaissance.
And I think it's so amazing to call those back and point and kind of tie them back to actual portraiture of the time, mm-hmm. because it adds to the storytelling. I mean, the production was like super knowledgeable and passionate about art history. There's this one specific portrait that comes to mind. Mm-hmm. There's this scene where Mary, the mother, she's trying to get George married. He's already seduced the king. He's already got his place in court. He's already the Duke of Buckingham. Mm-hmm. But she's trying to get him married so he can have an heir and continue their family name.
Yes.
He doesn't want to do that. She ends up locking him in a room with a daughter of a well-known family.
Yeah.
The Manners, Catherine Manners. Pretty much to make it seem like they've compromised her. And now they have to marry, right? Plotting and scheming.
Also, the way she's in on it.
Oh, she's down.
The way she's like, my life could be a lot worse than this. I'm chilling. Don't you want babies? I could probably do that for you.
I've heard stories of the well-hung...
Lord Jesus. Not that.
You know, I've heard stories about this shit. Let me see if I can get a piece of this. And in this scene... she's wearing like this tangerine, yellow, orangish dress. He's got blue. He wears a lot of blue throughout the series. In this famous portrait of them two as husband and wife, where he's portrayed as Adonis and she's portrayed as Venus, she's got this tangerine orange toga and he has this dark blue toga on. So in the scene where they're forcing them together, they're resembling the colors that is famous in this portrait. In this portrait, she's also portrayed as, I mean, she's got her breasts out and she's supposed to be Venus or Aphrodite, which is like the goddess of seduction and love and sex, fertility, right? And that's the reason why they made this match was literally to have children. Mm-hmm. And she pretty much...
she's chilling. I mean, she was chilling.
By being down with the plan, she's essentially seducing him for a change.
She's straight chilling. She's like, anyway, wouldn't this be fun?
The actress, she was so a great counterpart
good.
To George's character. Like, the way she was just down.
Down for shit. And don't you love how his mother was just queen schemer, mother schemer, and then he just marries Schemer Jr.?
100, yep.
Obsessed?
Yep.
The man loves a strong woman. And a strong man. And mostly men.
He likes a strong energy.
Ah, period. There it is. Pansexual king.
The episode where Somerset puts King James in, like, a blindfold. Mm-hmm. And organizes like a whole orgy for him and makes George play music in the corner and watch, right? To display like he's got the power. James is his. Somerset's not George. Mm-hmm. That episode starts with that, right? And like they show this painting, that painting you see in the beginning, in the opening credits, where somebody's getting stabbed in the neck.
Well, yeah, they're cutting off his head.
By the end of the episode, King James has essentially chosen him now as his favorite. That episode ends with George in that room and the painting being moved out of the room.
I did catch that when I was watching that episode.
I was like, oh.
And you see him looking at the painting so like disdainfully good. And it's like, you've got power, bitch. Bitch.
And so throughout this episode, Somerset's in trial. Like they start finding out that he was scheming. He sleeps with him and makes him believe that he's going to help him out in court.
Obsessed.
And all of that. Oh, it's so fucking good. Mary comes back into court. The way that by the end of the episode, they're taking the painting out and it's just George in the room. I was like, oh, shit. He's taking over. Mm-hmm. That's him taking over. Does that mean that the painting is representing Somerset's demise or is it foreshadowing?
He's just out here. I think something that is made salacious about this series is like, there's a lot of sex. Nicholas Galitzine is fucking everybody. And it's like, yes. In a way. But these scenes kind of happen because they demonstrate George's descent, right? Like he starts out kind of morally neutral and ends almost as like a full villain. Like my man is drunk on power. And the use of his body, the use of his beauty, like his sexual interactions with people to gain their trust or to disarm them, become more and more frequent as he just lets himself go into the pursuit of power and into overpowering King James.
Well, no, sex is his tool.
But it becomes his tool so much more.
After he realizes how much he can manipulate people with sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it worked for him over and over until it did not. We started seeing the demise of the sexual encounters. So it started off with a sexual encounter turning into deceit, where it was somebody using it against him.
Yeah.
Then we saw him trying to seduce his way out of a situation, and it didn't work because the other person wasn't down for that.
Yeah.
Down to the very last time you see him trying to seduce somebody sexually and it doesn't work out for him.
Dude, and he's so, when people aren't down with him, he's like, are you joking? Are you good?
Do you not see?
What? Like, do you not see?
Hold on. Are you okay?
Do you not see this lace front wig? Like, how dare you?
Okay. Speaking of the lace front wig, I kind of liked him with the long hair.
We could not be less aligned.
It's something about the hair in the face when you're mad at it.
I don't like it.
That's like, okay. I don't know.
I don't like
it. I don't know. The wig did something for me.
I don't like it. And you know, you're not the only person, because I've been interacting with like listeners on Instagram who are like, I like the long hair. And I'm like, shut your mouth.
You know what? I just like the face. It'll work with the face. Long hair, short hair, it's the face. Because the thing about Nicholas Galitzine is just that
he's so hot. He's a human person that exists on Earth. He's so hot. And not in like a platonic art way.
That's just long hair, short hair, that's just how I feel.
You weaponizing me against me is wild.
Weaponizing? This is validation.
I'm validating
your thoughts.
I can't,
Nigel,
believe you've done this. I simply can't. Like, wow. Consider me betrayed, okay?
You know something too? We mentioned before, decay, right? How they kind of show this decay throughout in little ways. So two things. One, and this was a sister of the pod brought this up, when George sets up like the outside castle for the king, he's out there for what feels like days.
Yeah.
And the fruits that are out on trays and things, they start to rot and you're seeing it rot. And it's like almost foreshadowing the decay of his health, the decay of George's power. Everything's kind of just coming to an end. Mm-hmm. Two, while this is happening, right, during this trajectory, while George is kind of gaining his power. So something that you notice on King James, and I'm not sure if it comes up in the show, but it definitely, as I've read, it comes up a lot. He didn't like to bathe. He didn't shower. And his nail beds are dirty. Throughout the series, anytime you see his hands, his nails are dirty.
They're
and
long.
Grimy. And long, and there was just like very little hygiene. As George gains more and more power and is almost regarded as almost an equal to King James, you start to see him dirtier. There's smudges on his face. His hands don't seem clean. It's almost like the closer he comes or you see him come to like having equal power as the king, because there's a point where their power is almost equal.
Absolutely.
You see him physically dirtier.
The longer hair plays into that too.
Like it feels unkept. It feels...
And to be fair, the hair that he has like at the start is not contemporaneous.
Like the short haircut.
It's not right. How a person of the time would have worn their hair. Also, can we just call attention to for a second, like, okay, so it's well known, I feel like by this point, that Bon and I are lovers of Normal People. We are lovers of a book adaptation miniseries format, okay? And Normal People was fucking great. we are having, and Nicholas Galitzine said this in a fucking interview, which I thought was so funny. He wants to take the dangly pearl earring of Mary and George, and he wants to turn that into the new Connell's chain from Normal People.
Ooh, that's tough. Because let me tell you, it wasn't Connell's chain specifically.
It was Connell, baby.
It was the neck that wore it, baby.
It was that rugby playing neck.
It's the way that it kind of just emphasized just the smoothness and girth of its...
The girth. I just had to say that one again. Thank you.
Of this human. I don't know that you can see that in an ear. Or maybe you can, right? Because you do get a bit of a glimpse of a neck. But I think that that's the difference, right? It's not so much the chain. It was the model. I mean, but you can kind of say the same thing for the pearl earring.
There's literally an Instagram account for George's pearl earring.
And this is something you do notice as you're watching. Also, as he gains more power, that pearl earring gets bigger and bigger. It's used as a vessel for storytelling. The more power, the bigger the earring. As well as, obviously, people pay him in jewelry. And there's this scene where he's giving his wife a necklace and she's asking, you know, how he got it, who gave it to him. And he pretty much explains, oh, you know, they paid twice, once with this necklace and once with flesh. Like, quite literally, he just pimps himself out. It was like the money on the nightstand for him.
You have to have such a specific constitution, because this is essentially sex work. Like, to do sex work, I have so much respect for people who do sex work, because the way,
like, you're able to just off, and it's like, okay, this is my money, my job.
I have so much respect for sex work. I mean, unabashedly.
Mary used sex as a tool.
Absolutely, she does.
I mean, she has to,
because she's a
initially
woman.
As a woman, her husband dies and he was fucking terrible. And then she has to marry to be able to sustain her family. And because she married somebody with some money, she was able to send George to France.
Yeah.
And continue to advance her family. That guy died. She married the next guy. It was to continue to have power. And she's another one that, the same way we're talking about, like, how James was a simp for George. Mm-hmm. She was kind of a simp for her lover.
She was a simp for her girl.
She had her girl, and you could not tell her that she couldn't take her girl to court.
Yeah. I mean, but that was also strategic. And this is just for the show. I have not read this book, so I can't speak to, like...
I don't know about this right. part, because the book doesn't go into
yeah.
her relationship outside of George. As far as I've read.
And this could absolutely be a detail added to the show for, like, salaciousness. And I think it's a very well done detail, because it mirrors a lot of George's exploits in his adult life. But, you know, Mary has this female lover. Not only are they, like, lovers, they spend a lot of time together. They're obviously, like, physically involved. But she also uses her as, like, a henchman. Mm-hmm. She's carrying out tasks.
To do her dirty
She's
work.
Doing errands. And so that's what I mean. It's not necessarily that feelings don't exist, but it is that it's still strategic.
Yo, the way that George just got knighted for dancing, like he's like the Cardi B of the 17th century.
That's so fucking upsetting what you just said, and I'm angry. How the fuck? What the fuck, man?
Just a little skip and a hop,
dude. A little jig, a little skip and a hop. Can I perform for you? You sure can,
bitch. Yes, you can fucking perform for me.
You better chill. You better scram.
Let me see you pull those strings, though. Ooh. Yo, the way King George would look at him when he's playing, what was it? The cello?
¿Qué sé yo?
The big fucking vaina.
La vaina. La vaina. My dude, can I just fucking say, I love that they didn't even try to make it seem like he was actually playing the instrument. I love that they did that, because that took so much pressure off of him, seeming like he needed to know how to play it.
The viola. That's why he was playing the viola.
Yeah. One thing I will say about Mary and George, like, their personal wardrobe, they ascend. Their ascent to higher society, like being at court, their clothing just increases in quality. The colors get brighter. I mean, the quality, the intricacy, even like Mary, when we see her in the first episode and she's still in her first marriage and her husband dies and then she's kind of scheming, like, how are we going to move up? How are we going to move up? Like, she's not really wearing, like, the hats. She's not really doing, like, this full three-piece color-coordinated business. But it starts. As soon as she's getting George, like, into the court, as soon as she mm-hmm. gets her second husband and she is plotting, like, the outfits just start to look tighter, sharper. Color palette is more consistent. This striking blue against her red hair, against her fair skin, like, ugh.
Fantastic. The bunny hat, that shit sent me.
Dude,
like, where? What?
I know.
A scene comes to mind. Her first day in court.
That she fucks up.
Like, she's got on really whited out skin, like, really totally powdered.
Fully
face.
Made of lead.
Yes. Like, the completely powdered face in lead mm-hmm. and the bright blushed cheeks. When you watch, for example, Elizabeth I. Mm-hmm. Right? Or the Golden Age. Oh, God, I love that movie and the costuming in that movie. When you watch that, which is a couple decades before King James's reign, obviously King James mm-hmm. came into power right after Elizabeth I. That's the aesthetic that she went into her first day of court. That's like somebody right now walking into a party like
it's the 80s.
Made up like it's the 80s.
And she proceeded to get comically fucked up.
She did.
Comic. And can I say something? I didn't, when I was watching it, I didn't understand whether that was strategic or not.
Well,
or if she just happened to, like, she got freaked out and then drank too much and then fucked up at court.
You know what? I'm not sure either.
Yeah.
Because even with all of that, like, everybody was making fun of her. Everybody was looking down on her. However, King James kind of took pity on her a little bit.
And she said something like that to George. Be injured, need helping, because he'll try to help you.
He likes an underdog.
Yes.
Maybe that was her strategy to go in there, pretty much be embarrassed so that he takes a bit of pity on her and then starts to favor her later on.
Yes.
She milked this relationship to the point where she was the only woman that King James trusted for a long time.
The wealth of knowledge that woman could bestow upon us. How to abuse our children. How to be a pimp. How to get kings to let you be the only woman they trust. Wow. I'm going to watch it again. It's a good fucking show.
Yo, you haven't even talked about Lady Haddon.
My bitch? My girl?
Speaking of women and power and yo, dog. Lady Haddon. All the shit she did with everybody else, she couldn't do it at Lady Haddon.
No.
She had to go to a man.
That's why she had to trap her. Lady Haddon is played by this English actress named Nicola Walker. Holy shit, dude. She's so fucking funny. She's biting, like, every line. It's literally like somebody walks into the party and calls everyone fucking out of their name. You're full of shit. Just you're full of you. Shit. You're full of shit. Fuck you. Fuck you. I cannot believe I'm fucking here. And you know what? I'm fucking leaving. Fuck you, people. Like, Lady Haddon is a fucking icon and a legend, and I do feel really bad for her daughter.
What happened to Lady Haddon's daughter was fucked up.
And I will say, to even taking that back to, like, George, one of the only genuine relationships that you see George have is his relationship with his older brother, who is, he is in one way or another disabled and is not necessarily, like, mentally his age. For that reason, he kind of gets treated like a child for the whole show, even though he's physically a grown man. He has, like, these violent, like, episodes and violent spells. And he's genuinely one of the only people that, like, can't be used for anything. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. he's used to get to marry this woman's daughter, Lady Haddon's daughter. But other than that, like, John, I think is his name, he's not strategic. Mary cannot use John.
No. You know, Mary with John gives so much boy mom energy.
He's but perfect.
Like, no flaws. Like, he's fine. He's just had a bad day.
Yeah.
He's just tired. He didn't mean to. He's so sweet. Listen, I'm a boy mom. There's a level of boy mom.
You're not that kind of boy mom. Because if you were,
that's what I'm
we
saying. I'm differentiating. I'm differentiating. There's a level of boy mom where, like, where your child can literally do absolutely no wrong. Anything that happens is everyone else's fault. That's her attitude with John.
Yeah. Él es mi chiquito lindo.
Ese mi niño lindo. ¿Por qué tú le hablas así? Everyone else around them just has to pay for it.
Yeah.
You can take a son, a child that struggles socially. She can protect him herself at home, but she pushes him on to other people.
What's her alternative? I mean, she doesn't say as much. It's kind of just like, we have to set up John.
He needs to be able to get married.
Exactly. So that even if that means I'm lying.
So we can inherit.
Right. But it's like, even if that means that I'm lying to fucking everybody, he's the firstborn. He inherits everything that they end up having unless he dies. So what is she going to do? Kill her own kid?
It wouldn't go to the second son.
If he died. So she's going to kill her kid. It's like, that's where Mary stops. Mary stops at killing her kids. It's like with John, with George, you have to really be next level heartless to kill your kids. But her life would have been 10,000 times easier if she got rid of John, let George be the one to inherit. As soon as he starts doing his shit.
Then she's not a mother.
Exactly. She's a murderer. Monster. When you know monsters, she's only when you're a monster. Raised by one.
Yeah. That's what separated her from just a psychopath monster.
Yes.
Was she did everything except take her kids' lives.
Yes. I feel like that's why you can still have tenderness for Mary throughout the series. Because she really is doing almost everything to set herself and her kids up. If anything, she's not trying to actively hurt her kids.
Everything that woman did, she succeeded. Because the Villiers line is still involved in politics in London today. So she created almost, this is a little dramatic, but she quite literally created a dynasty. You know what's hilarious? Barbara Villiers, great niece of George Villiers, ended up being the favorite mistress of Charles II, had 5 kids with the man. They just remained involved with the monarchy for centuries. Just by using your God-given gifts.
Of fucking.
Of seduction.
Dios.
So in the final scene, she's sitting at a table with her family and like looking on to her descendants, essentially, is so fitting because their family continued to thrive within the monarchy for years and years and years and years till present day.
Dog, Kris Jenner.
Of the 17th century.
Her grandkids will never know a moment of strife or honest labor in their lives. Kris Jenner's been there. My kids are set up for life, bitch.
So does that make John like Rob?
Because he's been through the fucking ringer. Yeah, that does make him Rob, actually. And then Kim is George.
George.
Kit is Courtney.
Kit is Courtney.
And the thing with Kit, dude, is he's absolutely a fucking serial killer. And the person who calls him out for being a serial killer is Lady Hatton.
Dude, does he kill more people?
No, it's his energy's very sinister. And Lady Hatton is like, oh, and you've got this one who wouldn't hesitate to eat the organs of his siblings or some shit like that. Like, she says something like, Paola, but it's so fucking funny.
Truly, though.
But the thing with Kit is, like, he seems crazy and like psychopathic in a way, like a murderer, but he's the one that saves George from himself.
He saves George's life
from his own dumb shit, from keeping his guard up. Fuck it, keeping my guard, you know, up.
He's so attractive throughout this whole thing. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Fuck you're that. Fucking killing
yo me. When he went to Spain and fucked everybody.
Dude.
Except for the one guy he could not get. He tried to seduce him at the end when they were talking about
Gonzago or whatever his name was. Yeah.
The main dude. Yo, the scene where he's standing there and people are just looking at him in the court and then they show him fuck.
Dude, but that scene is supposed to represent like, I feel like it's almost supposed to represent like him spinning out of control with power, right? Like, it's almost not strategic.
It's not anymore. It's just
power. Men, women, who gives a shit, yo?
Together, husbands and wives.
Yeah. Chilling.
Because here's the thing. it's like this whole world. It's almost like mind-blowing. Like when you're so used to watching all of this restrained British media, mm-hmm. and then you see this, it was the Queen herself who sought out George to distract her husband from her...
From the Earl of Somerset.
From his present lover.
Correct.
She went out to scout her husband, a lover.
You know how many fucking kids they had, Paola? A lot.
They had like 7 kids.
They had so many kids. So you can't tell me that the man didn't earn a little fun. He didn't earn a little leisure on the side.
I think he had fun both ways.
You think James was bi? I feel like James was entirely...
7? If you had... one child, okay, unless the other ones were not his.
Oh, sus.
You know, like they were like sus, and he was just like, yo, are you doing your thing? I'm doing mine. All right, we good. Like, maybe, but 7, like, I can understand for duty, maybe 2, an heir and a spare. 7, you kind of liked it.
7, you're vibing, you're having a good time.
Crazy. No, it really is a good show. I'm gonna need to watch it again.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
All right, sister, how do you want to wrap up? What do you think?
Well, all right, just generally wrapping up Mary and George, like, we might do a full fucking deep dive. All I'm going to say, y'all, is, like, watch it. It's fucking good. Unfortunately, Nicholas Galitzine is both hot and talented, and it's annoying.
God, he looks...
And he's not even my guy. Like, he's still not my guy, but I can see him and be like, yeah. It's there.
He can seduce his way into the British monarchy today.
I'm deceased. I'm dead. Like,
do a little dance.
Like, do a little jig.
Do a little jig.
Perform for us.
Get hot tonight. Like, that's...
Papa in jail. Yeah, like, the show is so good. Julianne Moore is fucking spot on. Tony Curran, spot on. They're all incredibly talented. And here I am talking on a podcast. You know what I'm saying? Like, people are different. We lead different lives.
You're an idiot.
Oh, man. Yeah, we could go on for a very long time, obviously, regarding this show. And hopefully after I edit, hopefully this is listenable, baby. Because you never know.
The way these people went from nobody.
Countess.
To count and countess of Buckingham in... not even a decade.
The Villiers family still have an earldom. They are the Earls of Clarendon to this day. Yeah. So, all right. We're wrapping up briefly. I mean, again, not permanently. We're temporarily wrapping up that discussion on Mary and George. We'll definitely be dropping comments and shit forever, probably, about that show. It's great. And all right, everyone. You know what it is. Everything we do it big. Because we can never shut the fuck up.
Did we meet our hit clips quota of 1 hour?
We met 3 hit clips quotas. God, we're just so fucking insufferable. I don't know how anyone listens to this podcast. But if you are, please don't stop. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for being here.
We love that you listen to us. As always, friends, we hope you enjoyed this unhinged installment of SisFlix Hit Clips. You know where to find us. We are at SisFlix Podcast on TikTok, on Instagram. Email us at sisflixpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us your recommendations. Give us a little feedback. Positive, negative. We want to know. We want to know your thoughts. You matter to us. Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Leave a review wherever you get your podcast.
Leave a fucking review.
Please. Our review's looking dry. Oh,
damn. Leave a fucking review. Give us a 5-star rating. God. Thank you so much. Thank you. We love you.